And welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Today we want to talk about something that's very, very important, I know, to many parents, and certainly to those who are concerned about what happens when violence hits the schools or the churches or the YWAM ministries in Colorado or wherever it erupts. Violence is a concern to, I think, all of us. And Phil Chalmers has written a book called Inside the Mind of a Teenage Killer, a very interesting, engaging book on the subject. I think it's an important subject that parents need to consider from time to time. Phil, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. Good to be on.
You know, Phil, you have done an incredible amount of research on this kind of stuff. According to your website, you've interviewed over 200 teen killers and school shooters, along with numerous serial killers, mass murderers, and sexual predators. Why did you get into this, first of all, Phil? I mean, what drew you into this as something you had to study?
I started out just as a youth speaker. Spoke at churches, camps, youth conferences, stuff like that. And I evolved into public school speaking.
Okay.
And as I did that, I studied youth culture, you know, teen entertainment, all that stuff. And I got intrigued by the school shooters and the teen killers. So I really started spending time with that.
You know, I did some research a couple of years ago on the history of school shootings, and found there were a few kids back in the 1880s, 1890s, 1900s that were shooting their teachers. You know, they got angry, they got mad at somebody, and they just shot somebody. But the random violent killings, the mass murders in schools, really started more so in the 70s and 80s. I mean, is that your sense of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. What do you think inspired the modern kid or the postmodern kid to take up a gun and just sort of randomly shoot people?
You know, I kind of when I talk in my seminar and my school assembly and stuff, I kind of, there's a correlation between when we started teaching kids to kill in violent entertainment and when they started killing.
Okay. Okay.
So that's number 2 on my cause list.
Yeah.
I got 10 causes.
Yeah.
You know, you got the breakdown of family, you got the increase of drug use, but you got this violent culture and violent entertainment. You know,
right.
I grew up playing Pong and Donkey Kong and Pac-Man, and things have changed drastically in one generation, and we've seen that. Every day, 5 teenagers kill somebody,
mm-hmm.
every single day in America.
Wow.
And every day, 12 young people kill themselves every day. So there's really 17 murders every day in this country.
Wow, I didn't realize it was so prevalent. You know, we get the news from time to time and hear about it maybe 2, 3, 4 times a year. But if you got all the newspapers, heard all the radio broadcasts, you'd find out that it's pretty prevalent.
It's more prevalent than people think, because these things don't make the national media much anymore. Very rare that a teen murderer hits the wire. It's got to be an interesting case of some kind.
Now, Phil, you've got a chance to visit some of these folks in prison. What are they like? Are they typical convicts? Do they have regrets? What's the typical response, or is there no typical response?
Yeah, I mean, they're different. They're really, each one's different. I'd say a majority of, here's what happens. I'd say about half of the kids don't write me back, don't want to communicate with me, and those kids probably are not, you know, they're not, what do you call it? They're not sorry for what they did. Half of them will write me back, and about 25% of the teen killers really want to help me. So I'd say 25% of them are really remorseful, really want to do something big. 25%, they might want to help and do something, but they're kind of shaky. They're a little nervous.
Yeah.
Then about half of them probably are not.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. And
most school shooters are remorseful.
They are. Isn't that something?
In my book, there's 6 different types of teen killers,
okay.
And the school killer is a unique animal, the school killer, and they are very remorseful. They usually confess right away. They're very remorseful.
Uh-huh.
And I'm good friends with a lot of those guys, Pearl, Mississippi, you know, Jonesboro,
right.
Moses, like all those guys. They all want to help me out.
What pushed them over the edge? I mean, was there something that, you know, just got them to do this dastardly deed for which they're regretful later?
There's 10 causes in my book. So there's 10 causes that motivate these kids towards murder.
Okay.
Then there's 20 warning signs we need to be aware of.
Okay. Can you give us a couple of
those?
Can you give us a couple of warning signs?
Yeah, they'll be like threatening to kill people or kill themselves. They'll be always talking about violence and murder in their Facebook and their Twitter and their drawings and all that. They'll be fascinated with Columbine. They'll be really into guns, bombs, and knives. They're wet in the bed, setting fires, killing animals, peeping Tom. There's a bunch of causes or warning signs in my book. And once you spot all this stuff, there's six triggers that cause kids to kill.
Okay. Okay.
And once they get one of those triggers, they could be very deadly.
Okay. What are the triggers? Give us a sense for the triggers.
Their girlfriend dumps them. They get suspended or expelled. Their mom and dad say you can't date that guy, that girl, that kind of thing.
Right, right. Okay, okay. Obviously, the teenage years, incredibly emotional years, and probably given to some emotional swings. I'm trying to think back to some of my teenage years. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I could have been dangerous there for, you know, a couple of months here and there. I remember times when I was pretty depressed. You know,
yeah.
I mean, moods go up and down. And is it a problem when a kid has been depressed for a long time? Every kid's got a problem with, you know, emotional swings, I think. But is there a point at which a guy goes down for too long? Parents really need to get concerned. You know, he's talking about death. He's listening to death music. He's maybe spouting anger here and there. But it's just kind of the long-term anger issue in his life?
You know, there's I have this little workbook that I give to my son. I do an 8-hour seminar for police officers, teachers, probation officers, counselors.
Okay.
And I've got this workbook, and in this workbook, there's 25 questions that you ask a kid or ask parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of sifts through and see how dangerous the kid is. But you're going to, you know, Ali, most killers have 3 to 6 of my causes. It's a multiple cause crime.
Got it.
That's the first thing.
Got it.
If your kid is stable and all he does is play Grand Theft Auto, violent video games all day long, you could be okay. But if he has, you know, he's depressed, he's suicidal, he's into violent entertainment, his parents just got divorced, you start stacking things up, it becomes dangerous. Then, you know, the warning signs, I really watch those and see. The biggest warning sign is a threat. If someone's threatening to kill someone, that's a very, very red, big red flag.
That's when you got to go to DEFCON 5.
When a kid walks in and says, I'm going to kill you, to his mom or dad, that's like, that's the ultimate,
Okay.
That's not normal, mom and dad.
Yeah.
It's normal for your sons to say, I hate you, you suck, whatever. But is it not normal for your son to say, I'm going to kill you? That is a sign.
Yeah. At that point, what does a parent do? When he's really concerned, you know, there's real problems, threats, long-term depression. At what point do they just say, hey, we got to get counseling?
Well, there's two levels of concern. Like, I'm concerned and I'm really concerned, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm concerned, get him some counseling, get him some therapy, connect him to some positive role models. I'm really concerned, like, this kid's about to kill people. He needs to be removed from the home, put into a lockdown facility. They're all across the country where kids can get in-depth counseling for 3, 6, and 9 months.
You know, it is surprising to me how many stories I hear about kids from a Christian background, been to church all their lives, maybe they're homeschooled. I think of Matthew Murray here in Colorado that was involved in the YWAM murders 4 or 5 years ago, and also another kid who shot his parents up in Burlington a couple of maybe 1 or 2 years ago. Is there anything weird about that? I mean, you know, you wouldn't expect a nice little Christian kid to want to whack his parents. But I guess it can happen to anybody.
Yeah, I mean, how do I say this? Not offending everybody, but, you know,
I don't think
Christian kids are any different than regular kids for the most part today. There are kids that go to church and kids that are really on fire for God, right?
Yep.
So the average kid just goes to church and they're no different than the kid that doesn't go to church, in my opinion.
Okay.
And I have seen my share of kids who go to church kill people. Kill their parents, kill their girlfriends, whatever. We had a kid shoot both of his parents in Ohio. He was on the Bible quiz team. They had the pastor. He shot them both in the head because he couldn't play Halo video games. So,
But,
you know, those cases are out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's better that your kids are in church than not in church, but still, I don't treat them any different. You know, I look for the signs, the causes. Yeah. I look for all the same issues.
We did some extensive research on Matthew Murray, just simply because he was in our state, discovered that he had blogged some pretty vile threats towards his mother and father about 9 months. Before he blew up. And also, he was addicted to Marilyn Manson. You know, the rock band.
Yeah, I know Marilyn Manson very well. Yeah, yeah. that's... That's my number two cause of teen murder, obsession with violent media. Kip Kinkle, the school shooter, loved him. You know, a lot of these, pro Mississippi school shooter, Luke Woodham, loved Marilyn Manson. Asa Kuhn, the school shooter in Cleveland, loved Marilyn Manson.
Wow.
He actually died, shot himself in the head wearing Marilyn Manson's T-shirt at the school.
Wow.
So, yeah, that kind of music, Insane Clown Posse, Grand Theft Auto, all that stuff, violent movies, violent music, violent video games, all part of it, man.
So if you're doing some investigation on a teen murder somewhere, and the kid says, I like Marilyn Manson, I like the violent rock, I like some violent games, et cetera, you would not be surprised at all. I mean, is that almost universal, pretty much? They're going to be plugged into something like that.
I tell people, if you show me a teen killer, a mass murderer, a guy that shoots up a movie theater or a school, you're going to find violent media in his bedroom. No question.
Wow. So it's almost a one-to-one. Almost a one-to-one.
Almost guaranteed. The guy in Aurora, Colorado, you guy in your state, Aurora, Colorado, movie theater shooter.
Yep.
Loved violent video games. He watched a movie about killing Batman about 600 times called The Suffocator of Sins.
Incredible.
And it's all there, man.
Wow. See, I had suspected that was the case of the Batman murder, but I wasn't verified. But, man, you have verified so many of these cases. You know, there's nature and nurture arguments. You know, probably heard, you know, it's all nature, all nature, all nurture, all nurture. You think it's a mix of this? Do you think there's something wrong with the hearts of these kids, but there's also something wrong with the environment? In other words, it's sort of like a bad environment, bad music can play off on a bad attitude.
Yeah, I the way I sum it up is I don't think a killer is born. I think they're made.
Okay, so it's a little of both, or
I don't think a killer is born. I think there's influences on the outside. Another thing I want to tell your audience while they're listening is the Columbine killers watched the movie Natural Born Killers 50 times.
Wow.
We call that shooting Columbine, but that's not what they called it.
Uh-huh.
They called it the Holy Morning of NBK. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold named their shooting after their favorite movie, Natural Born Killers, NBK.
You know, Natural Born Killers showed up in a number of other cases in your book. I just noticed. I mean,
absolutely.
I was kind of going through it. I noticed that showed up maybe 3-4 cases. What in the world? I've never watched that movie. It doesn't sound very pleasant.
Yeah, it's a glorification of murder that the kids can relate to.
So are these kids?
I studied a lot of cases in your state, the Black Canyon, the Columbine, the YWAM, you got the Aurora, Colorado. You had some monumental cases.
Yeah,
I don't know what's in the water out there, but you've had some big ones.
You know what? We are a murder capital, unfortunately. Of course, somewhat the Wild West, perhaps. You know, it's sort of the Billy the Kid thing probably still being worked out in the state. But, you know, hey, what do you think is going on in their minds? They listen to this music. They watch these movies. See, not every kid takes those movies and that music seriously. A lot of guys sort of get lost. In fact, just yesterday I saw a website, okay, contrasting the increase in the use of computer games with the decrease in violent crime. I don't know if you've seen these things or not. I think it's a false cause logical fallacy, but I don't know what your thought is on that.
Well, what I would say when people say that is, yeah, you're definitely not going to play a video game and kill people. You got to have multiple causes. It's not just one thing.
Right.
So that's the explanation there.
Right.
You and I could play Grand Theft Auto all day and probably be okay because we got pretty stable lives and we're pretty stable people.
Right.
So that throws that out. But what's in the mindset of these kids? They don't think of the consequences and they don't think of their future. All they can see is their hand in front of their face.
Mm-hmm.
They want to date this girl or they want to borrow their parents' truck, or their parents are not going to take Facebook from them, and they will kill their parents or kill their whole family for that reason, not knowing they're going to prison the next day. They don't think that way. Sad. It's crazy.
What about family relationships, Phil? You think family relationships play into this? If the family marriage implodes or family relationships come apart, do the kids go into a tailspin sometimes over that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my number one cause. My number one cause of teen murder is unstable environment, which means unstable home or bullying at school.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a broken family, abuse, yeah, that's a very big part of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was surprised how big a part bullying plays in this thing. I was homeschooled as a kid, so not a lot of bullying going on in my home. But, you know, and we had decent family relationships. So, I mean, you know, we had a lot of good things going on, and we still do in our family today. But is bullying on the rise in public schools, private schools today?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
I didn't realize that. And what forms does it take?
Well, you know, it's kids are living in a very violent culture, and they're violent entertainment, so they're very violent.
Yeah.
it's, you know, it could be physical. Kids will start a Facebook up and destroy someone online.
Okay.
So it could be cyberbullying or face-to-face.
Yeah.
The good news is the schools are starting to get a little more aggressive. And I do assemblies, and my assemblies are, you know, we're tearing it up. And the more we can bring attention to this, I think, the better. So,
what can parents do on this one? What can parents do? What are the warning signs of bullying, and how can they get that communication going to kind of figure out if their child is doing well in their social relationships?
Well, most kids are not going to tell their parents they're being bullied.
Okay.
There's technology out there. There's a company called SpectreSoft, and you can actually download this on your kid's computer on their cell phones, and you can kind of monitor what they do online. That's the biggest way you can discover bullying. If someone's getting on their Facebook and trying to destroy them, you'll be able to see it. But most kids are not going to tell their parents being bullied unless you have a really open relationship with them, and you know, hopefully you'll have that.
Another sort of surprising thing that shows up in your book, I think, to some readers, is that there is some satanic influence going on. At least the Son of Sam confessed to that. And I noted that you got a chance to meet with, I think it's David Berkowitz, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Son of Sam, yeah.
Yeah. How big of a part does the satanic thing, the demonic influence, have, do you think, on these kids?
I get Christmas cards from Charles Manson with swastikas on them. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's one of my causes is gangs and cults.
Yeah.
And I believe it's about number six.
Okay, it's not every case.
No. But it's part of it. I mean, it's one of the causes.
Mm-hmm. Whatever happened to Son of Sam? You know, I noticed you got a chance to meet with him, and it seems to me he's got some kind of a testimony online. I've followed that over the last year or two. What's your sense of him?
He has definitely become a believer. He's turned his life around. His name is now Son of Hope instead of Son of Sam.
Wow.
That whole Son of Sam thing was made up by his attorneys about him listening to a dog speaking to him and all that stuff. That was all made up.
Okay.
Trying to get a mental illness plea.
Mm-hmm.
He just flat out said, I was bad, I was violent, I was into Satanism, and that's why I did it.
Yeah. And then now, over the last 20, 25 years, he's got a ministry going. His life is turned around.
It is. He spends his days in prison helping handicapped inmates.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's a pretty decent guy.
Wow. Does that happen to I guess you said, what, 25%? I mean, so a certain percentage, really, their lives do turn around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of these guys will never have a chance to show society that they're turned around because they're never going to get out.
But that is encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, they're never going to get out. They're gonna be stuck there.
I mean, it's encouraging their lives have turned around.
Yeah.
So that's worth something.
It is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, as we wrap this thing up, you know, what do you think is the greatest need for families in America, Phil? Get people listening. We have tens of thousands of families listening. What do you want to tell them? And what would you like to tell every single family in America if you got a chance to do so?
Well, before I do that, I want to tell your listeners two things. Number one, okay. I have a book called Inside the Mind of a Teen Killer, and it's really good information for if you want to get more details.
Okay.
And also just go to my website, philchalmers.com, and I'd be happy to answer any of your emails.
Super.
I think, you know, obviously God, I mean, I can't say this in many of the venues I speak in, but spirituality is important. I tell my audiences that, you know, they must give their kids a spiritual upbringing.
Hmm.
But parents must put boundaries around their kids. Parents must spend time talking to their children. You know, really do your best to find a line of communication.
Yeah.
At the end of my seminar today for adults, I teach them you should take four opportunities every day to speak to your kids at dinner time, when you take them to bed, when you drive them around from place to place, and when they have breakfast before they go to school. So, you know, communication, being involved, put some boundaries around their lives and turn them on to spiritual things. I think that's important.
Good basic gut-level advice from Phil Chalmers, author of the book Inside the Mind of a Teenage Killer. Phil, thanks so much for joining us in Generations. It's been great.
Thanks, man. Nice to meet you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it from Phil Chalmers, one who has done an amazing amount of research, perhaps more than any other person, on the subject of teen killers in America today. And in some, friends, understand that ideas have consequences, and some kids play out the ideas they get from the media, and some kids don't. Some kids stay within the metaphor. Some kids get lost in the metaphor. One reason why we may see a decrease of violent crime here and there is because you do have a lot of kids who are escaping into their basements, and they are distracted by the games for the time being. until they live out those experiences in real life, as many have attempted over the last 30 to 40 years since we've seen the rise of violent media in America. Some kids play out the media, the ideas they get from the media, and some kids don't. And here's the other point. Relationships do matter. Relationships, number one. Family relationships, number one, shows up again and again and again. Where families begin to implode and where relationships begin to unravel, you're going to have serious problems. And by the way, homeschool kids, not immune from these sorts of things. Homeschool kids, not immune from the media. Hey, a lot of these homeschool kids get the very same media, same culture, same games. In fact, a lot of them have more opportunity to play games than the kids that are busy in the classrooms. Why? Because there's very little oversight in their lives, and the parental relationships may be going south as well, and parental discipline may not be there, and if those issues are not kept in balance within the homeschool environment, you're going to see some implosions within homeschools among Christian kids as well as those who don't attend church at all. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can get a little more information on these things from Phil Chalmers' book, Inside the Mind of a Teenage Killer. I do want to give you the heads up. It is a fairly graphic book and probably something you don't want the small kids paying attention to. But it does help to understand what's going on in our world around us. Please understand, ideas really have consequences, and the kind of cultural devices used today have an impact upon the minds and the lives of the tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people that are participating in these things. I did some research on some of these games, and friends, you're talking about 20, 30 million games sold of some of these things like Grand Theft Auto and Halo and others. You're talking about 20 to 30 to 40 million of these games sold. In fact, we had Phil Telfer on this program just a few weeks ago, and he said that these now, the violent computer games are now the number one most popular entertainment sources in the lives of Americans today, at least if you look at the gross receipts involved. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with this radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation. Have you ever wondered what the next generation of Christians will look like? Will there be a solid core of millennials that will lead in the direction of righteousness in an age of unrighteousness? Where will this core come from? Folks, we want to answer these questions at the Gen 2 Leadership Conference in Cincinnati on January 30th and 31st, 2015. We plan to unveil the Gen 2 survey there, the largest spiritual survey of the millennial generation to date. The initial stats from Pew Research Barna indicate that the millennial generation is less likely to support strong biblical marriage, strong families, and freedom issues. But what about the bulk of homeschool graduates? At the Gen 2 Leadership Conference, we will challenge the young leaders to take up the baton and lead in family, church, Christian education, home discipleship, and government in the next generation. There may be some bad news out there with the rise of statism, socialist medicine, sexual nihilism, but there's good news. It's time for Christian leaders to pull together and strike out with a unified, straightforward, biblical vision for education, culture, faith, and family. Ken Ham, Al Mohler, Jeff Myers from Summit Ministries, Dr. Brian Ray, Israel Wayne, Rick Boyer. Check it out at gen2conference.com, folks. That's gen2conference.com. We have priced this exciting conference at the lowest possible rate, because this conference is for leaders, pastors, elders, and young people looking at leadership sometime in the future. Join us January 30th and 31st for the Gen 2 Leadership Conference in Cincinnati. To register, it's gen2conference.com. That's gen2conference.com.